Welcome back to Word on the Hills and to our guest today, Diane Taylor. Diane, writing is just one of many creative arts, and I wonder why you're drawn to writing rather than perhaps sculpture or photography or dance.
Well, that's a good question, and in fact, I love to dance and have done quite a bit of it, but as a focus for my life, it has been writing, and I think the main reason for that is that I grew up watching my mother write, and she wrote a book all during my later elementary school years, and she would write in the morning, and then when my sister and I came home for lunch, we'd have to listen to what she'd written in the morning. So she was a good role model.
And talking about being a good role model, you mentioned that you teach memoir, and in fact, what you read us is from a book on writing memoir. But how did you become involved with being a teacher of writing memoir?
Well, I guess, you know, I started out life as a teacher. Well, that was my second occupation, actually. The first thing I did was medical lab technology.
Oh, good heavens, what a difference.
It is quite a leap, but my father always wanted me to go to university, and so after I finished the course in medical lab tech, which I'm really grateful for, it has been so useful in my life, I went to university, and after that, it just seemed, after watching so many teachers at university, they became my role models, and I wanted to teach. Plus, I also had a great French teacher in high school, and when I went into teaching, I taught French, and he was my role model for teaching. And so I had a grounding in teaching, so if I learned something myself, I wanted to pass it on.
Oh. Describe one activity you might do with a group of memoir students.
The first assignment, we do assignments in my classes. I give them an assignment to come to the first class with already prepared. I ask them to write a maximum of 250 words on why they want to write their memoir. And this then gets them thinking in that direction. And then when we come to class, everybody reads what they have written, and that gets us started.
People, I would imagine, find it difficult to really dig deep and to stay, I don't want to use the word honest because the converse of that is dishonest, but maybe authentic is a better word. Do you have ways to help them stay authentic with what they're writing?
Well, everybody's story is different for starters, and we give feedback in class on, like, everybody gives feedback, well, if they want to, and most people do. And that, I think, is very encouraging to stay on line with who they are and to continue in their own voice. And I also give suggestions as to what that voice might be. It might be playful, it might be studious, it might be edgy. And those ideas give them alternatives that they might pursue with their own writing.
Oh, that sounds really interesting, to be able to find a voice to tell the story, because I imagine the story is very different depending on which voice is used.
Absolutely. And humorous could be another of those voices, and it depends on. I also, we work on themes at one point. What is the main message that people want to convey? And that might affect the voice as well.
So how do people find out about your course? Where do you usually hold them and when?
Well, I've been giving two a year, one in the fall and one in the spring. And sometimes they're at the Peterborough Public Library, and you would find out about that one from either my website or from the Peterborough Library advertises quite extensively in that area. Yeah. And this past spring I gave it in Grafton, and I just put notices up around town, and I guess word of mouth as well.
What is your website if people want to check it out?
www.dianemtaylor.wordpress.com.
Great. Do you have a new project on the go?
Yeah, this morning I wrote the preface for my book, so I won't have a new project really until my book is finished, And it's just, it's really almost finished now. And I guess the project is finding a publisher, confirming the publication of it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. It's a lovely spot to be in, to be near the end and just sort of see the next step and and move along like that.
You would know that.
Well, perhaps you'd read us another piece and tell us about the piece you're going to read.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is moving from the body to the land, and I think it's really important to include the landscape as character, almost, because it says so much about who we are, and it shapes so much of who we become. Yeah, so the land. Sustainability. What does it mean? It's a two-way street. Earth will sustain us if we sustain Earth. If we care for the land will care for us. What does it mean to care for the Earth? It means the same as to care for another person. That is, to find out what the needs are. Can a person be damaged by words and actions? We all have seen this. Can the Earth be damaged by words and actions? We know now that the Earth is damaged. We are on the edge of this new direction where the planetary and the personal merge. A new language is developing. Thomas Berry, a theologian who prefers to be called a geologian, talks about the end of the Cenozoic era and the dawning of the Ecozoic era. Wade Davis, ethnobotanist, talks about saving plants, animals, and ancient skills in our ethnosphere. And this is the first reason why the land deserves to appear as character, perhaps, in the story of your life and endeavors. The character of the land, the homeland, where we have dedicated our energies, shapes our own character. We are intermingled with the land. When people must separate from that part of Earth where they have loved and been loved, they sometimes take a handful of the Earth. Let me come back to the African saying, it takes a village to raise a child. What about the village, town, city, suburb, community that raised you? What were the collaborative efforts that fed you, nourished you in body and soul? We tend to think of people, homes, and maybe schools when we picture that village. However, surrounding that village are chickens, gardens, shade trees, crops, breezes and desiccating winds, seasons of plenty, seasons of want, water at the base of hills or mountains, or water that must be fetched on a two-day trip to a ladder into red rock. This is the second reason that land deserves mention in memoir, because the land sustains that village. Jill Kerr Conway begins The Road from Corain with 6 pages of the land as character. There is the drama of cumulus clouds that pile up, character development as species move from creeping and crawling vines to eucalyptus trees that rise up on the horizon with themes of survive and multiply. Then she brings the creatures onto the giant scene. Kangaroos on the earth, parrots above the earth, rivers below the earth. Enter onto this already living and breathing landscape, the first nomadic peoples who hunted over the land for 40,000 years until there came a new arrival, the white settler, who came to take vast tracts of land. Balance shifted with the arrival of settlers and their sheep and hard work, but it's clear that all living things are shaped by the hot blasts of the sun above and the red dust of the land below. This is the homeland that shaped her. Barack Obama ends Dreams from My Father by noticing the land in Kenya where he has connected with his paternal relatives. This small plot of land means birthright, inheritance of his father's struggles, his granny's love and place in family. He pays tribute to the land by bringing it into his consciousness and into ours. He and his 17-year-old brother walk around the compound on the dirt road, pick at leaves that grow on bushes by the road, and watch the rain as it moves across the valleys. There ends his story with the land. It has been a collaboration between that place, which bred that culture and those struggles, and his parents and their parents. that village. Place is a powerful and permanent part of the people we become. What am I but a person in a place at a particular time? Place can be a room, a house, a boat, a street, a tent, or a vanished neighborhood like the Irish Griffin Town in Montreal. And crucial to that place is the living, breathing, great outdoors with all its majesty and interaction with us. In a very real scientific sense, the earth breathes us and we breathe the earth. When we include the botany and geology of our particular place on earth in our history, we are moving beyond the boundaries of ego into natural history, from ego towards eco. We know about human rights. Ecuador is the first country in the world to grant rights to plant life. The Ecozoic era is upon us. Bring awareness of it into your memoir. Happy landing, fellow geologians, as you recreate with words your particular place on earth. Let us, your readers, see the trees and trout, hear the moles and mosquitoes, and touch the furrows and fire. Imagine it alive and breathing alongside you.
Thank you, Diane. That was really interesting. And I think that brings us to a close today. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in again today and hope you will join us next week. Me, Gwyn Sheltimer, and my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed on Word on the Hills, Northumberland Radio 89.7 FM.